And welcome or afternoon, evening, depending upon where you are in the world and whether you're listening to this live or at the recording. So good to be here with you all today. Thank you for calling this in and being here in this way today. We are working with transforming grief into its healthy role of dispersion, releasing, letting go, surrendering, allowing, making space. Pick your synonym for it, they all work. And in this, we're working with the context of the fawn response or people pleasing. Yeah. My voice is a bit scratchy as I just finished teaching for Body Talk Fundamentals and did a lot of talking lately and have had some full clinic days in and around there too. So my voice is just a wee bit strained. And I feel like maybe that season, and I hate to say this, that fall chill is in the air that might be aggravating. It just ever so slightly, as I have a bit of a reaction sometimes to the dust in the air at this time of year, it seems. So now, as we settle in for today, getting comfy and cozy, I'm going to invite you to make any adjustments that you might need to make, letting your body make any wiggles and woggles. Yeah, there too. Hey. And as you settle in, I'm going to invite you to begin here by means of breathing. Every inhale, an opportunity to call in, to receive. To drink in life. And every exhale, an opportunity to release, to let go, to make space. And every breath, an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. And if any part of that is pleasant, to even neutral, taking time to savor that, to receive that. And as you drink that in, I'm going to invite you to begin to actually savor a little something else. Now, I'm going to invite you to find that thing by looking outwardly or inwardly, letting your gaze scan your environment, looking in all directions, and letting the gaze settle on anything in particular that's pleasant to neutral, and noticing what it is you like the most about that thing. And taking time to locate that pleasant to neutral thing. And then taking time to appreciate what it is you like the most about it in this moment. Perhaps it's the way the light and the shadows play with together with it, or what it reminds you of. Perhaps it's the color or the shape, the size, something else. And as you drink that in, beginning to savor it, much like you would a fine beverage or a fine meal. I invite you to breathe that in. Breathe that in just a little deeper now. In a way that breathing isn't something that you need to effort into. It's more the breath is an opportunity to relax deeper into all that you're savoring here. Then I invite you to notice the response of all that. What happens inside of you as you're present in these ways? What's happening inside the body? That also might be interesting to notice. Might even feel good if it does, savoring that too. And as you continue to breathe that in and savoring all that feels good, and notice what happens inside the body with it, and savoring whatever feels good about that, I'm going to offer my thanks. Thank you for being here. And thank you for calling this medicine in. Thank you to all that have gone into you being here today in this way. Thank you to your families, your ancestors, your lineages, as well as to your villages, to those that support you in all the ways that they do. And thank you, thank you, thank you to those that have caretaken and stewarded these lands, that have nourished us all, that have allowed for this existence to be in the first place. The deepest of thank yous. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. Blessings on your journey today. So interestingly enough, we're starting off in the eighth house. This is the house of death, rebirth, regeneration. It's the house sometimes of hard knocks, where we traverse some, well, much like birth, the labor pains, and we can feel the contractions of life before we are reborn. Something often needs to die, so those labor contraction pains may also be the death throes in a good way. Just starting off on a nice light note this morning as we get right into things. And as we work with that cycle, it actually sets the stage for regeneration to happen. Without that sensation of something dying away and the opportunity for those contractions to birth something new, it's difficult for anything different to happen. And you know that sort of same sense of aliveness you get when you experience something for like the very first time? It's working with that kind of regeneration. And even though it might not be the very first time you've experienced it, there might be something new about an experience that you've never noticed before. And that may just be our source of aliveness, of life, of the capacity to regenerate within ourselves. So this opportunity of challenge to create awareness and ultimately relief and a sense of regeneration, new life, new possibilities, new opportunities to come alive, gets to be something that may over time be something that you welcome. Maybe pain isn't something to run away from. Maybe pain is actually something to deepen into, to let ourselves steepen on occasion. Doesn't mean we like it per se. That would be, well, quite frankly, masochistic of us. But it might mean that we have the opportunity to notice from a more mature vantage point. Yeah. And as we work within that, working with the consciousness here of shame, as well as guilt. And this is actually the shame and guilt of simply existing in the way that you are. And that's actually showing up through this moment, as well as the moment where you were conceived and you existed. And it's coming from your ideas that your parents had of those that created you, that sex was somehow shameful or dirty or wrong, that there was something wrong about conceiving in the first place. That pleasure also was wrong and not something to be overly taken in and enjoyed. It's like, yeah, you had a moment of that, now move on back to the hard work, the pain, the suffering. And I always think it's so ironic that we, and me, look for pain and suffering when it's usually plentiful around us. We don't really need to go looking for it. And yet the thought of turning towards joy in the favor of suffering or pain or the things that we know for sure will be there for us is a choice that we often malinger over, shall we say. And we might even have a tendency to be shy, to move towards joy, might even outright fear it to a degree on a subconscious level. So as we work with that dynamic, working with the permission statement, it is safe to exist as I am. And related to that, it's safe to be me. It's safe to express me. Pardon me, we're going to fine tune that. It's safe to express me. And I don't necessarily mean verbally, but just simply to show up as you are in the body that you have, with the mind that you have in this moment. What if none of that, just for a second, what if none of that was wrong or bad or needed fixing or had to be a project in any way, shape, or form? What if just for now it got to be a moment of, well, that's curious information, that's interesting. And what if you got to be in wonder and awe, much like you would see a small child investigating, like their very first butterfly or their very first blade of grass or their very first experiences in nature of any sorts. For the first time they pick up a block, all those firsts that they explore. What if we could come to it from that same place of curious aliveness? What might call forth? What might that offer us? And offering you the opportunity to do that just in this moment, just for now. Feel free to try it on and see what might happen. If some part of you gets in the way of taking that in and receiving that, I invite you to notice that part of you and to welcome it, to allow it to be here just as it is, without needing to change it, just simply letting it be. Letting it know that you're not here to fix it or change it or judge it as bad or convince it to go away or anything else, but simply letting that be here. And that's only if that's here in the first place. But if it is, allowing that to just simply be and see what that offers. It becomes the same exploration just through a different lens, a different window, a different doorway. So, in essence, there's no way to not do this. There's no way to do this wrong. There's no way to mess this up or to not have this happen. You just get to study it however it's showing up. And amongst that, at the same time as all of that, we're going to head to the lumbar spine, the lower back. We're going to both the vertebrae as well as the intervertebral discs, as if the discs themselves, which I often think of as an embodiment of comfort or soothing, almost like, you know, when you get to lie down on the couch or the bed after you've been going hard or maybe working out or doing lots of landscaping or lots of cleaning, or you just had a really busy day, lots of hours where you've been on your feet and you lay down and there's that moment where your back just goes, ah, oh, and it sinks into the cushion below. I think of the intervertebral disc as being a place where that gets offered all the time. It's always available there. And we're just going to invite those vertebrae to receive that cushion, that comfort, that sense of, oh, I can actually relax here. And we're offering them the permissions in the form of a question. What if I don't have to hold myself up? What if I don't have to hold myself up? What if my only job is, again, just simply to be, to exist? And all the other forces of gravity, the celestial forces that counteract that, do all the holding me in place. And the only job for the vertebrae is to be able to take comfort in the disc below it. And as we do this, the low back represents abundance. So, what if this low back could become present to the consciousness of abundance? Now, often we think of abundance as being like, oh, we're aware of the good things. However, part of you might actually be wired to notice the abundance of challenge, the abundance of pain, the abundance of suffering, the abundance of people-pleasing behaviors that are here as well. And as we work with this, the abundance of, in particular, people-pleasing behavior in family dynamics. We're actually going to run a seedry on this. That's going to continue for the next, actually just past our next session. It's going to go for the next 8 days. Next week is a breathwork week. And for the breathwork week, I'm going to encourage people to, as much as you're available to, So you put yourself on camera so I can actually take note of how you're breathing and offer you as a group more specific feedback. So I won't be addressing you personally per se, unless you want me to, I can do that. But more so just to see what's present in the group. As I see the body, it gives me a lot more information. I can navigate it without that. But if you're willing to be on camera, it gives me just that much more. And even just having your upper body and face would be lovely. The legs included are even, an extra bonus so I can see that too. But I digress. So as we come back to this, running this Sidri for the next 8 days on the abundance of people pleasing contained within the family dynamics. Interesting. And as we work with that, it's working with a pattern of the belief systems that you need to be more emotionally available for others than they are for you, that in order for you to get your needs met, you have to be abundantly offering things, and then you might get a trickle of that back. There's a lack of reciprocity in essence here. And as we work within this, those interrelationship dynamics within the family lines, which is very eighth house energy as well, as the eighth house works with interrelationships and the kidney, which processes all of our ancestral stuff. We're going to work with that Sidri in conjunction with linking all of those people-pleasing dynamics in the low back through to the kidneys and the kidney meridian, as the kidney meridian also governs this region of the low back, in particular where the spine joins onto the sacrum and that final intervertebral disc in that area. And the Sidri that's running for 8 days stands for C, circulation of all the healing resources, blood that carries our passion, nerve our communication, lymph that drains our toxins, our gunk, our waste, our low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing, along with sheer vitality, consciousness or awareness, right down to all the little guys, the electrons, the protons, solitons, neutrons. Working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor. Endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids that lower inflammation, lower anxiety, lower depression, help our nervous system, our immune system alike to heal. And then balancing yin and yang, feminine and masculine, or nourishment and protection. And then also circulating through here. Hydration, helping the cells to take in water, enjoy, release any impurities. At the same time as that, we're linking the pineal to, interestingly enough, the area of the third eye, but in the back of the skull. So at the same like horizontal plane level as the third eye, but in the back of the skull. It's working with this idea of needing to have eyes in the back of your head. And be hypervigilant, to be on the lookout, to be ready to meet the family's needs and, any notice. At the same time as that, on the other side of that coin, working with being blind to ourself, being blind to our own needs, our own sense of self-protection, our own sense of being pleased. And within that, a whole lot of resentment of thinking, well, other people are putting themselves first, but they don't ever put me first. Type of energy. At least that's the voice of how it sounds like in my head when I'm in that place. Maybe you have a similar voice. Okay, and we're actually gonna run another Sidri on that. I'm gonna finish explaining the Sidri now. So see circulation of all the same healing resources here. And this Sidri is also running for 8 days. And the D is for the defrag, much like a computer defrag or a spring clean. Taking the clutter that doesn't need to be here, what remains can be readily reorganized and utilized for healing. Then all of the R's, reevaluation, recontextualization, and reprioritization. Getting out of rock and hard place type of thinking and opening up the possibilities where it may have seemed like there was none before. Then integration and introspection shift the underlying consciousness. Thinking of this as the release. The surrender, the letting go. Okay, Then we're gonna unwind some connective tissue adhesions all the way from the thymus gland all the way out to just below the collarbones on the bottom side. And this is an area which is often referred to as the quote unquote belt of fear, or the second belt of fear. The first is around the diaphragm. And this belt of fear typically correlates to fear of heart expression, opening up the heart, connection with the heart, connection to others via all things heart and love. And we're working at all the times where that was either misunderstood, neglected, taken advantage of, or abandoned. So your desire for love and connection, whether it was thwarted in any one of those ways, working with that patterning. And I'm going to bet for most of us, we've had opportunities, I'll say it that way, to notice it in all of those categories, abandonment, neglect, etc., being misunderstood. And it's all adding up to this idea of I am not worthy of being seen, and I have to earn that. I have to do something about that. It's not just a given right. And here we're running the permissions and just finding the exact wording. Okay, here it is. Your existence determines your worth. Existence determines worthiness. The fact that you exist is what determines the worthiness of you. You're here, you exist. And what if that was the only requirement for worthiness? The more we see that, the more we also have to embrace the other side of that, which means if it exists, it carries worthiness within it, meaning challenges, pain, suffering, anything that's showing up in your world that exists means that it has worthiness to it. And we can push that away and reject it, but at the same time, we'll be pushing away and rejecting our very self, our very nature of us. Ah, what a conundrum. So, as we embrace our own worthiness, we also may have the opportunity to have the maturity to step into embracing the challenges of life and allowing them to be here in good ways for us. Or in a way that you can relate to them from a different place rather than needing to knee-jerk react to them. What if all of the experiences, including the painful ones, had a nugget of worthiness inherent within them and that's why they were here? What if? What does that change and open up? And as you exist, and that determines your actual worth. What is it to breathe that in, that your existence determines your worth? And it's being, all of that is being defined by the consciousness of, and it's a phrase that you might see a little bit more of from me down the road. The phrase is unrepentant peace. Meaning you have nothing to apologize for. You have nothing to be repentant for. There is nothing to be shamed about or shameful about. Your existence means your worthiness in a way that doesn't need to be apologized for, shamed, or anything else other than received with wide open arms. And as I say that, the connective tissue begins to soften. And for some of you, it'll unravel quite a bit. For others of you, there are some deeper layers here. And one of those layers underneath this is a freeze response. And it's carrying with it the energy of, I don't want to see that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to know that. And it's just like, nope. And related to that is the underlying fear of overwhelm. And with this, looking at this legacy as a pattern, this pattern of rejecting ourselves, rejecting our experiences, and in turn creating our own lack of worth, our own shamefulness in the process of that, is one that was not just stumbled upon in this lifetime. This was learned. This is going back multiple generations. And perhaps this is the only thing that's keeping us separate from connection and deepening into that connection to spirit, to source, to creator, to God, to that which is eternal, to Yahweh, to Buddha, to Allah, whatever the term may be for you. Perhaps this is the only thing keeping us separate. And what if that was actually a learned intergenerational response or a legacy burden, a burden that was passed down the family lines, that we should deny that, that we should reject that sense of connection? And here, working with generations upon generations upon generations of grief that you may not have even known that was there in the first place. And we're going back 14 generations down both sides. I keep hearing the number 27. Oh, okay. It's linking into Kinney 27 points. I'm like, I don't think we're going back 27 generations. I just said 14. What's up with that? It's linking into the kidney, which works with the ancestral spiritual realm. And it's going into the kidney 27 points, which are our switching reflex points, which help us to cope or deal with stress. And we're looking at from here, releasing this legacy of grief, which has created a certain amount of stress you may not have even known was there because you just got habituated or accustomed to it simply being there, that sense of separation. Creates more stress than we realize within the system. John has always said for years about body talk that it's not a healthcare system, it's a spiritual system with a side effect of healthcare. And I don't think he was wrong in any sense of the imagination at all. Don't think he's ever said anything truer. So as we work within this kidney 27 region, it's then linking into the kidney 24 points. Which hang out a little bit lower and a little bit more in the midline of each side of the chest. And these are the spiritual ancestral burial grounds. And within it, releasing a fear of death, a fear of death, and related to that, because there's like an anticipatory grieving already. That's like a grieving before we're even dead, we're grieving our own death before it even happens, which is a normal human process. And one that is often made more painful by the fact that our culture doesn't understand death. We don't learn about death. We don't seek death. The mystery schools of old used to say, let's die before we die. And they used to help people to embrace the concept of the living death before you actually die to help you be at peace for when that time actually came. The Stoics had a saying related to this called memento mori, meaning remember you must die. Remember you must die. And using that as a point of reference for seeking and to understand one's life by looking at the inevitability of death itself. And as we work within that particular theme, again within the family lines, this anticipatory grief, this understanding of the fear of death is not small. And that's impacting not just the kidneys, but also the very lungs, the passageway of the lungs, including all the respiratory linings of the throats and the sinuses, and things being exceptionally dry here. We're going to run hydration for those passageways for you as well as for your generations past, up to 14 back through both sides of the family lines. Not a small thing. And all of that is linking into the 12th house, house of endings, releasing, house of surrendering, house of allowing. And related to this, a grief for the longing of wanting to connect back to oneness. To again, whatever the word may be here, creator, God, Heavenly Father is coming up to say this time round. Interesting. As it also sometimes we associate spirit, God, etc., creator, spirit, whatever the word is, with different genders. Sometimes we think of it as masculine or feminine, and sometimes we think of it as not having a gender. And in this case, working with any particular associations that you've had with it around the masculine. And this relates to, there's a book about this called A Road Less Traveled, and it's by Scott Peck, and he talks about how we connect to that energy of spirit, source, God, oneness is actually first programmed within us and how we relate to our parents. So we're looking at how you related specifically to the male caretakers and father figures in your life and your actual dad alike, and how that set up your imprint and how you relate to creator, spirit, God. In this case, I use the word Heavenly Father, or that which is eternal, looking at it through the masculine lens. And for some of you, that might not quite fit your worldview, but it may have been something that your relatives before you did relate to. And that's still trapped within the very bones of us, up to at least 7 generations, says Body Talk. And we often see quite a bit more than that show up in Body Talk as well. Okay, beautiful. We're gonna tap this part out. Breathing, receiving, however feels right. Okay, and giving that just a couple of rounds of breath, letting that part really settle in there. And then it's going into the. It's not super anatomical, but I'll try to describe it with anatomy. It's going into the left side of the back of the neck, going back through the left shoulder, but more on the back side, and going down through into around the shoulder, through into the left chest. So it's that particular line. And in that line, there is some of the deepest layers of grief here, held around the times in which you wanted protection, but it wasn't there. And the grieving of things that you never even knew were supposed to exist, and you didn't actually get a chance to experience that because they weren't part of what was offered to you in your upbringing. And a sense of shame inherent within that, like you did something wrong to not be granted that. And the pattern of making yourself wrong for not having received that, as our left side works with receiving. And the grieving is not limited to this generation either. This is going through the maternal lines. 17 generations of women. Wombs upon wombs upon wombs. And all of those that have come before, thinking that this was somehow their fault that they didn't receive what it is they wanted and needed to develop in good, healthy ways. And it's particularly orienting to having your feelings welcomed, potentially cherished, and having someone to assist you with helping to figure out what these feelings are. But instead, having, if not all feelings, some, being told that those weren't okay to have, and being told in some way, shape, or form to suppress those. And for some of you, there's some extreme cases where it felt like that was linked to survival. Like if you didn't suppress your feelings, your life might actually be in danger. And as a small little one, that is an awful lot to have to figure out how to navigate. And within this, there is the sense of also longing for the understanding of how to express your feelings in a way that doesn't necessarily require you to have to protect them in the way that you think that you do in this day and age, but instead allowing for those feelings to be protected by means of expression, by means of vulnerability, which seems counterintuitive potentially at first to certain parts of you. Potentially. And here, running a cellular repair in that dynamic, all the way through that region, back the left neck, back of the left shoulder region, or top of the shoulder, around the left shoulder, and into the left chest. Restoring these cells back to their fullest potential of health. And then that same area on the right side, unhooking the belief system that I should be rejected if I cannot prove my worthiness. I should be rejected if I cannot prove my worthiness. In particular, improving worthiness by means of suppressing our feelings. Like, I'll just show you how little I need to feel and how good I can be at that. And it's inducing and related to the good girl complex, as I'll call it, the good boy complex, good girl complex. Good girls do this. Nice girls do that. This is how good girls should be. Good girls shouldn't be a nuisance. Good girls shouldn't feel anything other and display anything other than sweetness and joy. There's a religious expression that I often think of when I'm in this terrain, and I believe it's more so around the Mormon traditions, and I might be off on that. That does it most obviously or blatantly. But it's interwoven into every single religion that I've seen in some way, shape, or form. And their wording is keep sweet. In other words, no matter what's happening, just be sweet about it. And that's a whole lot different than being able to simply accept what's happening and not rejecting our current experiences of life. Okay. So one says suppress everything that you feel, and the other says welcome all the feelings and allowing them to be there just as they are. And they often get confused, and sometimes when we hear the, I'm going to call it the spiritual side of that versus the religious side of that, it gets pushed away or rejected on the spiritual side because of the religious roots for some that are tied in that way. Okay, so as we work with it, and I'm not saying any religion is right or wrong about any of that, they might have some interesting interpretations around the books that they have as a resource around that. And other people who read those exact same books come to the spiritual understanding of it all. So it's more around how we're interpreting and perceiving that than making any one particular way of navigating that wrong or right. And just finding the difference being anytime it's invoking the suppression of feelings, that may not be the approach that's serving you well. And it may also potentially be offering something for a short time, but it may not in the long run continue to offer what you thought it did when it was an action that you had in place for a little bit, or a way of being that you've had in place for a little bit, or a long time, potentially even. And all of this is now linking into house number four. And house four is where we begin to figure out our sense of self in relationship to our outer world. It's where we begin to put together how it is we relate and protect ourselves from that world. And there's this idea of as long as I have the correct beliefs and values, then nothing should come to pass that will create harm, pain, or suffering. And as we look at that's also not going to be so accurate in the long run. And we're looking at all those places, all those times, all those ways that you learn to think that you could escape pain, suffering, that you could bypass it as long as you just acted a certain way or did the right thing or invested in enough knowledge or invested in enough experiences that would help you, rather than understanding the awareness that this piece of pain, suffering, challenge that's arising carries inherent value within it. Okay, I'm gonna gently walk off that soapbox now. And we're gonna unhook a related bundle of belief systems from the spleen, which is the organ and the meridian of this fourth house. And we're unhooking this idea that you failed, that you did a bad job, and that you're wrong or evil or sinful for not having had a blissful, easeful, joyful life. In a nutshell, releasing self-blame, releasing the internalization of, I did something wrong and that's why this is happening. I should be punished, I am being punished. I don't know that was much of a nutshell, but perhaps it illuminated some other angles to that. And as we work within that, working with circulation of lymph, as that's what the spleen governs, and running a seed-tree on the capacity for your spleen to help that lymph circulate and govern that, along with the spleen's role of being able to lift things up. To allow for chi to rise and to elevate, to allow you to begin to remember what it is like to be earthed as well as to soar, to ground as well as to be elevated, to be protected as well as to be nourished by the heavens above. What if you get to have both and you don't actually have to choose? And as we work with those seed trees, all the same steps as I mentioned previously, and those are also continuing for 8 days. Eight is our magic number. Eighth house, all these 8 day seed trees. And while that happens, unwinding some connective tissue around the ventricles of the brain. And if we could take those ventricles of the brain out, spin them around, and look at them from the right angle, they actually form the AUM, the OM symbol. Which is thought to be the sound of the universal psychologist, helping us to relate to the understanding that time has truly no beginning, no middle, no end, that there is a certain eternity that circulates forevermore, regardless of whatever arises, birth, death. And it's also said in physics that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It just sort of shifts around and changes and morphs into different expressions. So even when you die, you, what made up you truly, doesn't ever die. So even in your death, there is no technical actual death. It just really feels that way to some of us, unless we die before we die, and then we have a different perception on that all. At the same time as all of that, going into the right low back, the quadratus lumborum muscle that hangs out in the right lower, or well, it hangs out on both sides, but we're working with on the right side. And we're working here with the grief of not having achieved as much as you would have thought you should have in order to prove your success as a person, as a man, as a woman, as a person. And this too is holographic through the family lines, going back four generations down dad's side in particular. Not that it doesn't go further, but we're just working with it up to that point. And as we supportively allow for that pattern to be digested, linking it through to the heart chakra, as the heart chakra works with harmony in our relationships, harmony, respect, and dignity in those relationships alike, and offering that to the masculine nature of you. At the same time, I see the vertebrae of the thoracic spine, and it's kind of splotchy, meaning it's not continuous all the way through, and everybody has some different spots of this throughout this thoracic spine. It's on the front of the thoracic spine, which is running through our rib cage region. And the splotchiness is of areas that are, it looks like withering, or it looks like logs on a fire that have been like charred or in the process of burning and charring. And you know how logs after on the fire, if the fire doesn't clearly burn them, when the fire goes out, and they have that interesting appearance, like they're not quite the same as when you first put them in the fire, but they're not ashes yet. It's looking at feeling like something's in transition, and yet there's this energy of death and grief stored within that splotchiness during this transition. It's like there's a stagnancy or a stalling in the full letting go, the full releasing. And here we're running the permissions of what if it was safe to die? What if it was safe to let go? What if, hear me out on this one, what if you might even like it? What if there's even a bit of pleasure in being able to allow that death, that letting go, that release, that surrender, that allowing to flow, to happen through here? And I just see the vertebrae take this big breath, and similarly being able to land on their intervertebral discs below, allowing them to surrender, to sink, to soften into that. And as they supportively release, let go, die away, I see color returning and even keeled life force, chi flowing through here again. Ironically, sometimes it's when we have things die and release that it makes a lot more room for us to come alive again. And it reminds me of that expression, the cave we fear to enter is often the one that holds our medicine. I'm paraphrasing. Holding the medicine that's the most valuable for us. Often the cave we fear to enter holds the treasures we seek, I believe is the correct wording. And that's actually linking to the permission statement of you are a treasure. You are a treasure to behold. All of you, just as you are, is a treasure to behold. And what if you could imagine the arms, your arms, and your rib cage alike, acting as an embrace of your inner treasure all the way throughout this thoracic spine, holding the very precious nature of your life force energy as if it was gold itself, as if it was the most valuable, precious thing there was. And what if the energy of grieving and allowing for death itself to roll through is what leads to that awareness? This is what the alchemists called, well, alchemy, transformation of what it is you thought it was, base lead, into the awareness of truly what's here, gold. This is what the mystics, the shamans, this is what they refer to as being in touch in the truth of who and what you really are. And allowing yourself to really experience, feel, remember, understand, become aware of that, to recognize the truth of that in every single cell. And as that runs through this region of the front of the spine in the ribcage region here, allowing for all the various musculatures through the upper back and middle back alike to be able to sync with your breath in a way that supportively allows for your upper chest, your upper body, to be held upright and might even allow for some opening of that heart, bringing forth new space for new life to flow through here. And it becomes almost like a wellspring of energy that begins to flow upwards through here, no longer needing to cinch, control, manage, govern, suppress anything downward. This is the gift of opening up to be with what is as it is and welcoming it to be here. And that in turn works out any other little teeny tiny, or perhaps even bigger than that, kinks in the garden hose, so to speak, of your spine, and opens up the flow of energy through here. I see the right side dropping down just a little bit while the left side elevates upwards. Right side down, left side up, right side down, left side up, and doing that all the way through the various vertebrae here. And doing it even up now through to the top of the rib cage and into the neck. And as it moves through the neck, working with the understanding of it's also okay to say out loud, to notice out loud, to share with others out loud, that wasn't okay, that's not okay, you don't get to do that to me. It's okay to protect yourself. It's okay to protect yourself. Which might sound a bit counterintuitive here. It's as we step into our no that we can really honor our yes. And as that continues up through the neck, also working with right side down, left side up, all the way through now into the head, face, brain, mind. And as the right side here in your brain, your feminine drops downwards, grounding, the left side, the masculine, rises upward, allowing for your sense of intuition and insight to come in ways that are deeply grounded and connected without the usual or occasional doubt or second guessing that many of us do. And also allows for that left brain knowledge to be while rising in a way that allows us to, I'm going to use a bold term, soar, to soar with confidence in what you know to be true for yourself, in your inner truth, and in a way that others get to literally see, hold, and respect within you, as this even goes into the very eyes. And working with, again, all the musculature and the bones of the eye socket and the nerves that innervate the eye, the right side dropping down, the left side lifting up. You don't need to hold back your sense of your intelligence and how that expresses through you. What if your internal intelligence, your internal genius, is exactly right for the expression of you and is exactly what's needed in this way in the world at this time? What if that too gets to be welcomed just as it is? And as that rises through the head brain, potentially through the mind as well, into the layers of the linings of the brain, the arachnoid mater, the pia mater, the dura mater, and unwinding the various tensions that have actually kept things the other way, that have forced the right brain up and forced the left brain downwards, unwinding that adhesion all the way through this dura mater. That lines not just the head brain, but all the way through the spinal column where we've traversed here. I like to think of that dura mater as a very protective layer of the three linings. It's the sturdiest, it's the toughest, it's the one with most oomph to it. meaning also it can grip onto things and stay sort of locked. And as we unwind that, releasing any particular layers of grief around what you might have been missing out on had things been opened up in other ways. So that's the grief around what we didn't know was available to us. And sometimes when we get in touch with what's here for us, we might have grieved all the time that we missed out on it. So acknowledging that, addressing that here. There's one particular shaman, I'm blanking on his name in this particular moment. He spoke at the Minnesota Men's Conference. I may have mentioned to you guys about him before. He likens grief to praise. He likens grief to praise. Meaning, when we're in touch with our understandings on their side that feel really juicy, feel really potent, feel really in alignment, feel really good, and we grieve what we've been missing out on. It's offering a unique form of praising for what actually truly is here. And to grieve the fact that it wasn't there previously is to also praise that it gets to be here now, which is a unique take on grief. Okay. And that's all linking now through to the large intestine. Through to this organ and the meridian alike of grief, and all the way down into the anal sphincter. And here we're working with the times where you were shamed for letting go. And this is going into the early years of your first 6 months of life when you were shamed for the quote unquote mess you made in your diaper, like you were criticized for how it is you let go. How it is you grieve. And what if it's actually really welcome now? What if just for right now it's really welcome to be a messy, grieving human who lets go in all sorts of awkward ways? All sorts of ways that might not be awkward either, but all sorts of ways and all the messy human times where it's not going quite the way you thought it would or quite the way you think it should be going. And what if that actually was just old programming that was conditioned from how it is you had bowel movements from when you were little? And what if we can begin to notice that and acknowledge that you're really welcome to, quote unquote, make a mess of things? And ironically or counterintuitively, perhaps, as you welcome your messiness, it may in turn actually creates a sense of easefulness around not actually needing to be criticized about how messy you are, releasing that need to be aware of and to be open to receiving criticism around how much you don't have your shit together, how messy you are, how uncoordinated you have been in your life, or anything along those lines. And as we release that through here, working with the permissions that the words here are interesting. The words here are grief has no plan. And what that means is there's no one particular way through grief. It's going to show up just as it does. And that's welcome to be here just as it is, just like you are. That grief has no plan. Grief has no plan. And then we're balancing the liver, which likes to have a plan and organized and have things just so, to the large intestine along with the lungs. And there's this release of judgment of, well, this is just all so chaotic from the liver's point of view. And as we release that judgment, welcoming the grief to be here as it is, and it's usually in ways that surprise us or become unplanned. As you release that from the liver, releasing as well the emotion of sadness. And it's coming out of the lungs and the heart, in particular on the right side. And all the way through the right armpit or axilla. We're going to tap this in here. Invitation to breathe and receive. Oh, excuse me. And now, as we bring this in for a nice soft landing, I have a song. It's 2 minutes, a little over 2 minutes. And this one is by Terry Riviera Piatt. From the album Blue Moon, and it's called Serpent Mound Chants. It'll help to loosen up anything else and to allow things to settle and integrate nicely, touching in on any resources that you might like from the very beginning and embracing your breath as you do so.
Hey, na 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 na, hey na hey na ho, hey hey na. Hey, na 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 na, hey na hey na ho, hey hey na na. Hey, na 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 na, hey na hey na ho, hey na. Hey na 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 na, hey na hey na ho, hey.
Thank you for calling this medicine in. And thank you for being here and being here just in the ways that you are, as you are. It's perfect. Thank you. And my deepest of thank yous for this depth of the work that you guys go into in our time together. Mwah. All my love as you have the next coming days, 8 days in particular, to continue to digest some of the stuff today that came up. I look forward to hearing how it unfolds for you all. And I'm gonna close with an Om Shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. Blessings in your week ahead, y'all. Oh, and you're most welcome. I'm so glad that observation served you and Most welcome to you and all of your ancestors. Yeah, you're most welcome. Mwah. I'm going to stop the recording here. And if anyone has any additional